Welcome to the Insane Asylum.
Welcome back to the Insane Asylum. This is the Night Living Dreads podcast. Podcast covers all and anything horror. Well, maybe not after this show. I am Otis B. Dreads, of course, as always, riding shotgun, Mrs. Dreads. Mrs. Dreads, how are you on this Sunday?
I am good.
I am hot.
It's very hot.
It is. It is like retarded hot.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? And every time that the temperature gets really just triple digits or just like unbearably hot, you always see that meme floating around on Facebook that says, you know, you remember in Super Mario Brothers when the sun's tracking you down trying to kill you?
Yeah.
That is what it's felt all week. And I know no matter where any of our listeners are, you are probably affected by the heat because it's like a nationwide fucking heat wave. It is retarded. It's like we have gone to the seventh circle of hell.
It was supposed to break today.
Yeah, well, I hear there is a little bit of a break coming this week. But that heat wave, my goodness, 3 days of triple digits. Unbelievable. Speaking of Facebook, let's give out some horror love. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Open, close group, best damn group, best damn horror group, I should say, on Facebook. Misfit Horror Fiend Club, a very close second, I may add. The Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on Wayne.
Slaughter on Garth.
Oh, see, it's not as dumb as you think. It's actually pretty catchy.
So
and got a new shout out, making friends all over the horror Facebook group landscape. And this one being called, and I love the name, Zombie Boob.
It's catchy.
It is catchy for sure. Zombie Boob. Check them out on Facebook. Again, they are a new group over there, which they do a lot of, you know, from what I've seen, they have a lot of like humor and things like that. It's a little bit of everything, but they do have some good horror stuff over there, and they are allowing us to take and promote the podcast over there to their members, and we are taking and going to help them and promote them around, throw their Zombie Boob name around.
Mm-hmm.
I like a good Zombie Boob.
Zombie Boob.
Do you like zombie boobs?
I'd be scared of a zombie boob.
Why? Why would you be scared of a zombie boob?
Because that's creepy.
Zombie boobs are creepy?
Yes.
Wow.
Could you imagine? It'd be like idle boobs. They come out with
Like idle hands.
Yeah, like idle hands.
But the boobs are just. And, of course, After Dark, over there on Facebook, the other horror group that we do put out there. Check them out. And our non-horror love, of course, goes to Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis spelled with a K. And very, very funny group. Check them out as well. And, of course, Night Living Dreads. Dreads with no A. We're over there as well as nightlivingdreads.com. So, let's get this shindig started. About last week sometime, the full-length trailer, Three from Hell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very pumped about that one. A lot of people, you know, and I've seen comments where, you know, over, I think it was on Gorehounds or one of the other groups that I visit where the trailer was posted, a lot of people are saying, man, this is, I don't know, this just looks horrible. I don't think so.
I don't think
Me
so.
Me personally,
either.
I don't think so. But I'm going to make a prediction here. And this is my prediction. Just by going off of the trailer, for one, I, along with probably a lot of other people, was right about how they're going to be able to continue from Devil's Rejects being at the end. There was the big shootout and blah, blah, blah. And I always said, you never see him die.
Right.
They're close to death. Oh, they're shot up. They're looking like a bunch of Satan Swiss cheese. They were full of holes.
Yeah, because they were fucked up before they even got in the car.
They were. And people were like, well, how are they going to continue this? They died at the end. No. No, they did not. You did not see that.
Right.
It was kind of open-ended. You know, you didn't really know what was going on. You assumed that they died. Well, the trailer, of course, explains that a little bit, that they did not die. And 3 from Hell is getting a special viewing.
Mm-hmm.
3 days in September. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing for 31.
Yeah.
Through a via a Fathom Events. FATHOM. Check them out and you know, check your local cinemas in your area and check that out. But they're doing you know, a little bit different things on each day. That would be again the 16th, 17th, and 18th of September. Mrs. Dreads, why don't you give us a little brief rundown of what they're doing each night? Because each night is a little different.
Right. Well, on the 16th, the first night, they're going to do a special introduction video from Rob Zombie. And then the first 50 attendees at each movie theater will receive a exclusive poster.
Probably a movie poster. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably like their banner poster.
Right. And that's actually the night that we're going. Right. We're going to the first one because we want a poster. And you're going to break some kneecaps if you don't get one.
If I have to.
If you have to.
September 17th, they're doing, you get to watch almost a 30-minute making of the film.
Okay.
And then on the final night, on the 18th, they're doing, a double feature of Devil's Rejects and 3 from Hell.
Which I was really kind of wondering which one I wanted to go to. I would love to see Devil's Rejects in a theater.
I mean, we own it.
I know. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen that.
Right.
But I just think it would be cool to, you know, watch it in the theater. But we decided we're getting a poster come hell or high water.
Yep.
And so we're going to the 16th one here in our local area, as long as the white coats let us out. The insane asylum. So, yeah, check that out. And if you are excited as me and Mrs. Dreads are, you will find a way. All right, now we're gonna. I was tossing, you know, it around. I mentioned it at the end of last week's podcast, and I don't know if I jumped the gun a little bit because the more I started thinking about our topic for this week, it got me thinking: is this really horror related?
I think so.
And the more I started thinking about it, and I even consulted with some of the mods and admins over at Gorehounds of Horror and tried to get their opinion. And, you know, one of the mods, Eric, he's, well, you know, I guess it depends on how, you know, I guess gory or violent or how he killed or blah, 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 you know. Well, there's a lot of similarities with our topic tonight, that being a one Richard Kuklinski.
Iceman.
The Iceman. And it's been so damn hot, let's bring in the fucking Iceman. So, but the reason that I say that is because, well, he was a contract killer. For the mafia, with the mob, the Gambino family out in Jersey and New York City. So to me, it was like, okay, are we telling a Goodfellas story here? I guess kind of. But the brutality and just the all-out lack of emotion, just this, I mean, he's a complete sociopath, for one. And he claims his the numbers out of his mouth as far as how many people he's killed is a little bit contested. They, you know, it's said that, I mean, for instance, I mean, they go from like 6 murders to over 100 possibly.
I think he killed more than 6.
Well, yeah.
And I think along the lines of you talking about, is it a murder for hire kind of thing?
Right.
Or
contract killer.
A contract killer.
Right.
But you think about it, if everything's correct on what's being said, he started killing at the age of between 12 and 13.
Yeah, he was about 13 years old when he had his first kill.
I mean, I'm sure he went contracted out by somebody. That, I mean,
no, that was not the case. He was not.
So I think if you think of it from that point of view, then you're thinking more of a serial, because then he kind of is a serial killer.
Yeah.
A mass murderer.
Right.
I mean,
and you know, Wikipedia actually, you know, they label him as a serial killer, but his killings a lot of times was, you know,
contract killer.
Contract for money.
Right. A lot of money.
A lot of money. And he didn't have the same, I guess, motive behind it. There was no sexual gratification like we see in
right.
a lot of serial killers. They get some kind of either, you know, sexual gratification or just something to kill or that they get out of killing.
Right. And he told psychiatrists that he got nothing out of it.
No, he felt nothing.
There was no gratification. There was no thrill. There was no nothing. He just did it. And he said his reasoning for doing it is to make money.
Yeah.
Because it was a job.
Absolutely. And, well, a little background. He was born April 11th, 1935. He has since passed. That would have been on March the 5th, 2006. Died, what they call that, Kawasaki disease. It's a tightening of the, closing of the blood vessels, I think is what it was. Inflammation
vessels.
Or something in the blood vessels, which he has made statements while he was in prison that he thought that he was being poisoned, which you listeners will find out that that's kind of ironic, given one of his, popular methods of killing. But I think this guy fits right along in with a lot of the serial killers that we've talked about here in the insane asylum. You know, for one, it's the cold, callous way that he went about it.
Right.
We see that in a lot. There is not a whole lot of, you know, remorse with a lot of the, you know, serial killers that we've talked about, their murder, they're not very, you know, regretful in what they did. Some may express that. Most of them don't. They're, because they're wackadoos.
Right.
There's mental issues there.
Right.
And that was not really the case with him. I think he was said to be possibly bipolar.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
who the fuck isn't nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, they go through his childhood, and yeah, he had a shitty childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad was a drunk, could beat the hell out of him.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
states that he killed his
younger brother. When
what, he's like 7, 8 years old
yeah,
when he killed
eight
him.
Years old, and he was, you know, violently beating because Richard was the middle child.
Right.
And yeah, dad was in a drunken rage. I think he worked as a brakeman on the railroad,
mm-hmm.
controlling the brakes for the trains and whatnot. And, I mean, just pretty much pissed all of his money away.
Right.
Drinking and whatnot. And yeah, very violent drunk. We see a lot of that in a lot of serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the very violent upbringing. Called his mother a cancer.
Yeah, because she was just as abusive.
Said that, you know, she would take sometimes and use a broom handle.
Or pots and pans.
I don't know why I find some of this shit funny, but I mean, yeah, and would sometimes even break the broomstick over him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as she, so not a very good, you know,
upbringing.
Now, you had mentioned his first kill. He was 13, and there were some Where did
he was being bullied.
I lost it. There we go. Yeah, he was being bullied. It was by a little neighborhood gang. What did they call themselves? Oh, I cannot remember now. But they were just a small neighborhood gang, and roughly around probably the same age as young Richard there.
Yeah, because they did a lot of it in school.
Yeah. And so, you know, highly bullied. He was picked on a lot because he was a tall, skinny kid. It said that his mother, in order to save money, would buy clothes that were 2-3 sizes too big for him.
Right.
So he could grow into them. She wouldn't have to buy him clothes for a while. And so his stature and the clothes that he's wearing probably look like a freaking clown.
Probably.
And he was teased a lot because of that. So this one particular group, a little gang of kids, they would pick on him all the time. It got physical. And he decided one night he had had enough. He's tired of being beaten. He's beaten by his dad a lot of times for no reason.
By his mom.
So instead of being the beaten, he's going to be the beater.
Yeah.
And he goes in and goes into the closet, takes the clothes off the rag. There was a wooden bar they used to use, you know, to hang your clothes up. Took that bar and just patiently waited and found this boy walking, is what one story says.
Right.
As with a lot of these, you know, serial killers and so there's different versions. We try to here in the Insane Asylum to find the correct one. But it stated that he walked out with this bar in hand, this wooden bar.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, what are you going to do with that, Pollock? What are you going to do?
Because it was just the one kid.
Yeah. What do you think you're going to do with that, Pollock? So he walked up to him, bam, smacked him right in the fucking head.
Yep.
And, you know, then they say that he got so into it that he just kept beating and beating and beating and, well, killed the kid. And said he felt very bad. He said he felt pretty bad.
He was going to get caught.
Yeah, he was scared he was going to get caught. He didn't really mean it to go that far. But he said he kind of felt something else. You know, at first it was a little bit of sadness. After that, he started feeling, well, not so much the sadness. He started feeling empowered, he said. And that caused him to, you know, come to the conclusion, well, you know what? You mess with me, I'll just beat your damn brains in.
Yeah, he said murder gets rid of all his problems.
Yeah, yeah. He you know, if he had a problem with somebody, he'd kill him. Done. So, you know, 13 years old, and you're beating kids to death.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me a lot, as we mentioned just before we started recording, reminded me a lot of Rob Zombie's Halloween in the beginning.
Yeah, I agree.
Where young Michael had enough. And I kind of picture it kind of happening that way.
Yeah. Well, that's how it kind of shows it.
That's how it appeared to me. Richard and his family, they lived in the Jersey City, New Jersey area. And it wasn't until later on that things got a little hairy for him. See, he only had an eighth grade education.
Right.
He couldn't get a good paying job. He had three kids at this point because, well, he had married, that would have been Barbara. Married Barbara and had three kids. I mean, he had total of five kids.
Right.
He married a lady by the name of Linda and had two sons with her, Richard Jr. I bet he's proud of that name. And David. And then he met Barbara, who was a secretary. He was working in a warehouse in Jersey. And I think he was like a driver, driving some trucks or something, or just working in the warehouse, maybe is what it was. And she was a secretary, and you know, she would notice him. And then all of a sudden he just decides, he brings her flowers, asks her out, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they go, and, you know, she's a Jewish woman, so, you know, you got to meet the mom. you know, and meet the families. He was very polite. But she states things kind of changed pretty drastically for her after they started dating. She
right.
said at that point that he met her parents, there was never a day that they weren't together. They were always together.
Right.
To the point where she wasn't seeing her family. She wasn't seeing her friends. There was an instance where she decided, well, I'm going to bring it up to him. This is, look, maybe we're seeing too much of each other. And he didn't like that. So he's kind of, they're in the car, and he's sitting in the driver's seat. And he's kind of has his arm around the back of the passenger seat where Barbara's sitting. And she states that she feels something warm running down the back of her neck. He had a knife that was apparently so sharp she didn't even really...
On her back.
On her back. That she didn't really like feel it, you know, until she started feeling something warm running down. And she was like, what the hell are you doing? He was like, this is an objective lesson. You never, ever think about leaving me or I will kill you. It stated here, I don't know how true this is, but she says, quote, I felt blood running down my back. It says he told her that she belonged to him and that if she tried to leave, he would kill her entire family. This is a guy which seems weird to me because he was very much a family guy, but maybe not her family. Maybe this is just a way to threaten her. Barb, it's said that Barb began screaming and she was angry and he throttled her into unconsciousness. I'm assuming that means he knocked her out or punched her, whatever.
Right.
She does not, although, state that in any of the interviews that I have
seen. Right, and he never brings it up. You never hear him say.
She does bring up the blood, the knife, and all that.
That she was stabbed.
She does bring up another time that Bad Richie, there was a good Richie and a bad Richie. And he was at times a hard man to live with. And you got to understand, I got to set the picture here. Okay, set the stage here. This guy is 6'5", and weighing close to 300 pounds. This is not a little guy at all. Now at the time that they met, he was a little bit skinnier. It wasn't until late, but he was still a tall, skinny guy. Didn't take shit from nobody. He spent a lot of time. Well, him and Barb got married in 1961, mm-hmm. and had two daughters, Merrick and Kristen, and one son, Dwayne. And that's when she started noticing this good Richie, bad Richie type personality thing. She says that he was a very very loving father, very much a family man. She even states that, their first Christmas together, he was just, in awe because he grew up with what she calls is like virtually no love in the house at all.
And they spent it with her family.
Right.
The first Christmas was with her family.
Right. And he was just in awe because he didn't realize this is how it works at Christmas time. There's actually love. There's no beatings. Dad's not over there sipping the eggnog and, getting ready to lay the smack down. So it was a very, different, something he'd never seen before. And so he had his good times and his bad times. He'd go into unpredictable fits of rage. Smashing,
punched her in the nose.
Yeah, smashing furniture, punching her when she said... She thinks she, said...
Told him dinner was ready.
Dinner was ready or was going to be ready or something. And bam! he just, breaks
her
nose. He broke,
Said her eye instantly blacked.
Yeah, because this is a big guy. And I'm gonna have some over there at nightlivingdreads.com. I'm going to have a couple or one or two. I haven't decided yet. Of videos that I really encourage everyone to watch because... This is why the way he talks about some of the things and you watch mm-hmm. him, it's very eerie.
Yeah, because he's very callous.
He's very, very cold, and that is not how he got the name Iceman.
Which, he's scary.
He's just a very scary individual. So, he played a lot of pool.
He
was a pool shark. And so to make extra money, he spent a lot of time at the pool hall.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't, he's trying to raise, three kids and not a whole lot of money coming in. So he takes and will play pool. And every once in a while, there would be somebody who would catch on to the fact that he was a shark. And they wouldn't either want to pay or, they would just call him out. And he said all it took for him was somebody, to just make him feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Make him feel uncomfortable.
Make him feel uncomfortable. And he'll just beat you to a pulp. Well, there was an instant where he took his instrument of money-making, that being mm-hmm. a pool cue, and, pretty much beat this guy to death.
Yep.
And beat him outside, I believe it was outside the pool hall.
Yep, and then just walked away.
And just, just walked away very casually. And so, his uncontrollable temper, and that kind of... I don't know. It got some people looking at him. It caught, the eyes of some people. One being some members of the Gambino family. He became associated with the Gambino crime family. And like I mentioned to you, it's like you don't even have to know a whole lot about the mafia or the mob. But you hear the Gambino family or Gatto, is that his name, Gatto? Yeah. I think so. All these, crime families and whatnot. And he developed a little relationship with a guy named Roy DeMeo. And what had happened there was he was taking and he's doing a little bit of, I don't know. he was
bootleg porn.
That was the word I was looking for. Bootlegging porn and children's movies. And I don't know if they were talking about the sale. She thought they were.
Because he was redistributing children's movies, which was legit.
Right.
It was when, it was the porn that wasn't so legit then.
And it was probably bad porn anyway from the 60s.
But He owed them money.
Oh, yeah. It was about $60,000. He, got a hold of a loan shark.
Yeah.
And, he had people that owed him, I think, for a lot of these tapes. They did not pay on time.
Right.
He's trying to go into business for himself, okay? Make some money on the black market. And, his debts, or the money owed to him, did not get to him. Therefore, he couldn't pay... the DeMeo, or Roy DeMeo. So, little Roy, and a couple of his little, henchmen, I guess, they pay him a visit where he's doing, all of the porn and taping and whatnot. And he said they roughed him up a little bit. Said he took it like a man. Even being as big as he is, he knew he wasn't, because Roy DeMeo was one of the, big guys in the Gambino crime family. He'd go out there and rough people up to get their money. He said to kill about 70 to 100 people himself. They had to go there and intimidate him a little bit. They said he took his beating like a man.
Yep.
And was able to turn around and pay back the money. He went, collected his money. I think they even said some of it came out of his own pocket because he couldn't get it all or he didn't have it all or whatever. So there became a little bit of respect between DeMeo with DeMeo towards Richard because, for one, he took his beating like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And two, he paid his debt off. So Roy and one of his buddies, they decide, okay, here. We're going to take a drive with us. I want to see, how loyal you can be, and mm-hmm. if you'll do pretty much anything. They hop in the car, drive down, you know, wherever they're at, New Jersey or New York or whatever, pull off to the side of the road. He says, you know, well, we pretty much, you know, kill whoever I tell you to. Yeah, he said, yeah, well, yeah, I guess, yeah. I mean, he always stated he'd never kill a child, never kill a woman, you know. And he said, oh, you know, Roy said, okay. It's that guy walking his dog right there. Kill him. Gets out of the car. He's walking across the street. As they're passing, as soon as they pass each other, he turns around, loads him up.
Yep.
Jumps in the car and they take off. So that was kind of his initiation, if you will. And mm-hmm. that kind of got him more into, you know, being the enforcer type right. deal. He wasn't so much a contract, a hitman, if you'd say, you know. But it kind of proved something to him. It wasn't until later when they seen how violent. I mean, he wouldn't just go and rough somebody up. No, he was taking them out. It was almost like there was this, he was... Even though he said he didn't get much from, you know, killing these people, I tend to believe that there had to have been something there.
I'm pretty sure that they made it known that they wanted him dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, he gets involved because he used so many different weapons. And... guns, knives, explosives, tire irons, fire, poison, asphyxiation, feeding people to cave rats.
Hmm. Yeah, he said that he took them down into like a sewer system-like thing, and he'd tie them up and just leave them there.
And he said he'd even do barehanded beatings, quote, just for the exercise. This guy is just, I mean, he's not crazy, but I don't know. I don't know. His favorite was cyanide.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple interesting stories with that. I have to backtrack a little bit, kind of getting ahead of myself. Ran into a guy they called Mr. Softy.
Yep.
And this guy, on the other hand, I think was a little crazy.
He was batshit crazy.
Yeah, he was, yeah. He was definitely a certified wackadoo.
Ice cream man by day, killer by night.
Man. And, you know, they said, you know, he'd drive a Mr. Softy around, you know, serving soft serve ice cream to all these, you know, kids. And he'd serve ice cream to the kids and then, you know, figure out who their parents were.
And kill the father.
And kill the father or something. I mean, this guy, and he was an explosives guy. He's the one, Mr. Softy, turned old Iceman turned him on to cyanide.
Right.
That turned out to be his favorite. Say he didn't like
easiest.
It's the easiest too. It's quick. It's not messy.
Let's say no cleanup.
No, it's no cleanup. And he would take a lot of times, and he'd be kill them, and then they'd go and, you know, maybe dismember them. I can't remember the name of the lounge that they would always go to. They had just this, you know, home base, and it was a little lounge, a little bar place, and, you know, they would literally in the basement or upstairs of this bar. I mean, they were dismembering people. They were hanging them up, gutting them like deers, draining all the blood, dismembering them, put them in, you know, bags, and then dropping them off all over Jersey and New York. So it was pretty much a house of horror,
right?
And, you know, but his cyanide. I never knew that you could do some of the things that this guy did with cyanide. One. The Mr. Softy, I think, was the one that turned him on or taught him about the...
sneezing?
Yes.
Yeah.
To put, you know, some cyanide in a spray bottle. And one little spray, and a person's dead if they breathe it in. And he decided he's going to, you know, do a little experiment, see if this, in fact, will work. He's standing on a corner. He's got a spray bottle. He's got a handkerchief in his pocket. He notices a guy, maybe mid-50s. Looks like he might be a good heart attack candidate, you know. And he's walking, so he walks by him. And what he does is he puts his handkerchief over his nose and then acts like he's sneezing while he sprays the guy a little, you know, mist of this cyanide water. He said the guy took 4 steps.
He's dead.
Said to be a heart attack. Cyanide doesn't last very long. Nope. in your system. What was the half-life again?
About an hour.
And, you know, you're done. I mean, they can't trace it.
Nope. They can't just chalk it up to a heart attack.
Chalk it up as a heart attack. And which is what most of them did. Another one of his little cyanide tricks was that there was a hit on a guy. He was at a disco.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's kind of funny. And you know, the very end of the show, we got about a 13 or 14 minute clip that I want to play because I want you guys to hear how he talks. And because it is so callous and so out there, it's just you also have to really see it too,
right?
But he's in this disco, and he's got a syringe. I'm guessing it was also cyanide. He jokes a little bit that you'll hear later in this clip I'm going to play when they ask him what was in the syringe.
Right.
He said, oh, his case, a heart attack. And so he's, you know, he's said that, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, gay people, you know, guys, you know, dancing around and everything. So he's trying to get, you know, closer to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, you know, he has this, you know, all flashy. I think it's like a bright orange jacket or whatever. I mean,
he said just flashy clothes.
He's just real flashy clothes trying to act gay. He was like a 300-pound man, gay man. He was like, you know, it just didn't seem to really fit in. And so he said he's out there doing all kind of dancing and whatever. And he said everybody's bumping into each other on the dance floor. He gets up close to this guy, bumps into him, jabs him with a needle.
Yep.
Guy falls out right then and there. Yeah. Couple minutes later, dead. Chalked up as a heart attack. So that was really his method. He didn't like the whole... He said there's a lot of, you know, myths out there that he would use a chainsaw to kill people. He said no. He was like, you know, that just makes one hell of a mess. You know, you're using a chainsaw, you got chunks of meat flying all up on you. No.
He's like, and you stink.
And you stink. So I thought that was interesting. And we're not going to get in too much to a lot of the killings because he's going to talk about himself,
right,
which I think is important to hear it come straight from the guy himself talk about these killings.
Right.
Another one. I'll just go through some random ones. Let's see. DeMeo. Okay. It said that he took DeMeo out.
Right.
There was some bad blood going on that was started to arise there. He was, you know, taking people out that, you know, wasn't ordered maybe by DeMeo because, you know, DeMeo wanted him just, you know, you're working for me. You don't work for nobody.
Well, he fired him.
And yeah. So there's some bad blood going around. And let's see here. In a book written by Philip Carlo, he writes that it was Kuklinski himself who eventually killed DeMeo on January 10th, 1983. DeMeo threatened Kuklinski's life no less than 3 times and humiliated Richard in front of others, including DeMeo's Gemini Lounge. That's the one I was trying to think of. And their crew. And that was just something you didn't do. He did not like that. You don't make him look bad. You know, that angered him. So he just sat and just waited for the moment to take this guy out. He said that Gambino boss Paul Castellano actually ordered the hit on DeMeo because the FBI was getting close to him.
Yep.
And they actually, these are two familiar, Gotti, not Gatto. I said Gatto earlier. John Gotti and Gene Gotti, brothers, they were actually approached about performing the hit.
Mm-hmm.
They reluctantly declined because they know how many soldiers this guy had around him. They thought it would be too hard to get him and that they would be unsuccessful. Eventually, DeMeo's own crew was ordered to do the killing. But before they could, guess who got involved? Good old Richie. he had a little business meeting with DeMeo and shot him in his own Cadillac, stuffed him in a fucking trunk. I know there's got to be people thinking, why are we talking about Goodfellas or some shit on a horror podcast? I can hear it now. Can hear it now. Stuffed him in his trunk. And that was the end of DeMeo. But Richard claims that at the time, he was unaware that there was a contract out on DeMeo. He was going after. So it's, you don't even know if he got any money for that. That
right.
was a revenge thing because you pissed him off, pretty much. So DeMeo's, out of the picture. Two more that I want to talk about would be Gary Smith. Watch them hotels in New York or New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You lift up the mattress. And the old saying, sleep tight. Good night, sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite. Don't let the tweakers bite. this is a little joke there that we told earlier because what had happened was he was using the cyanide again. Put it in his burgers. He had Gary Smith and Daniel Dempner had them wait at a motel in Jersey.
Brought him a bunch of burgers.
And he said he left them there all day. Came back, had burgers. The ones with the pickles on them had the cyanide. And he said that Gary Smith had the constitution of a freaking bull. He said he said most people, as soon as the cyanide's ingested, their eyes roll back in their head, they convulse a little bit, and then they're dead within, just a few minutes. This did not happen. So he ordered, Dempner
mm-hmm.
to take and strangle him with a cord from a lamp, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that kind of wasn't a good move.
Right.
And they stuffed him under the bed.
No, between the mattresses.
Oh, between the mattresses, yeah. And, well, no, he was under the bed because they had guests that came in.
Yeah, but he was between the mattresses.
Oh, okay. So he was, you get this dead guy who's been strangled, poisoned with cyanide. He's getting all bloated.
For 5 days.
5 days. They said approximately 20 visitors had stayed in that room over the course of this, maybe 5 days or something. There was at least 20 people in and out.
Right.
And finally it got to the point where somebody started smelling something.
I would hope so.
You would think, right?
air freshener if you're not smelling a dead corpse in the bedroom with you.
Man, right? So they pull it up. He's all bloated. He's all discolored and he's blistering up and the only way that they were able to be able to pin this as a murder was because of the ligature marks on his
neck.
And he said, other than that, they would have just thought he was just a drug addict. Because all tweakers and all heroin addicts and whatever you're doing.
Hide between the mattresses.
You do it between the mattresses. It made no sense to me. That's where the old tweaker joke came in. So I'm pretty sure Steppner probably had a feeling his car was being pulled soon. And it was. His body was found May 14th,
1983. In some wooded area.
Mm-hmm. And a turkey vulture was chowing down on him. And
they gotta eat too.
What?
So they gotta eat too.
Yeah, right. They gotta eat, man. It's just the food chain thing. A cyclist happened to been driving down the road, riding down the road, and spotted the bird. And
right.
That's when they found the corpse. And they said it was the body was discovered just a little over 3 miles from the ranch where their family, Richard and his family, would go horseback riding. Medical examiners listed Deppner's cause of death as undetermined. Well, they noticed they noted pinkish spots on his skin. He was at that time the third business partner or associate of Richard's to be found dead.
Right.
He was getting a little old at this point.
He was about 50?
Yeah, he was pushing 50 at that point. He was getting tired.
Getting sloppy.
He was getting sloppy. And he was also getting really paranoid.
Right.
He was thinking that the ones closest to him were going to turn him in.
Which?
Is initially what happened.
Right.
Another one we'll discuss real quick. And he'll talk about, I think, some of these that we're discussing. In the clip I'm going to play, Louis Masquet, on September 25th, 1983, Richard made another mistake when Masquet was found dead near a town park in Orangetown, New York. He had a bullet hole in the back of his head. This is the one. This is why they called him the Iceman.
Yeah.
This is the reason right here. Some people say, oh, it's because he was cold-hearted. Very true, but it's not how he got the name Iceman.
Right.
He got the name Iceman because he, I think he picked this also up from Mr. Softy, who I did not mention he did end up killing.
Yeah.
Some say he just killed him, basically, because he got what he needed from him. He learned how to do some of the things.
Didn't he threaten his family?
I don't know if he did or not, but there was a one incident where he did threaten and somebody threatened his family, five slugs from a .38 in the in the belly, done. You didn't fuck with his family. You didn't make threats like that because you were gonna die. He picked up somewhere where he took Lewis's body. After it was dead, stuffed it in an industrial freezer for like a year or two.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. And just to throw the cops off as far as the time of death.
Right.
So he decides, okay, it's time to get rid of this body. And he goes, disposes of it, but he didn't let it thaw out enough. This is in the summertime.
Yeah, it didn't thaw in time.
When they found it, everything on the outside looked like it was a recent kill or a murder kill. It wasn't until the medical examiner got a hold of it, cut it open, and noticed some crunchy sounds, which happened to be ice crystals around his heart. How the hell do you get ice crystals in the middle of summer in New Jersey? That's something ain't right here. That did not pan out very well. Eventually, the five unsolved homicides, namely the deaths of Hoffman, which I did not mention. He was a pharmacist who, at that time, there was a an ulcer medication called Tagamet. And I remember my mom, I think even my stepdad, took that. Very popular. It was like a wonder drug for ulcers. And he... And Richard were talking back and forth. Richard's like, yeah, I can get you a whole bunch of these and blah, blah, blah. And then this guy was going to buy them real cheap, sell them expensive, make a healthy profit. And had about $25,000 in cash. Went to a garage that Richard had rented out. And get there, and you know, guy's like, "All right, man, well, what's going on? Here's $25,000 in cash. What's going to happen now? Where's the product? Where's the merchandise?" Said, simply walked up, said, "There is no merchandise." Put the gun up to his under his chin, pulled the trigger. Gun jammed. It didn't kill him.
Right.
It did go in. It just it didn't kill him. So he's laying there. He's gurgling. His blood all coming out of his mouth. I again have to refer back to another Rob Zombie movie. Reminds me of Devil's Rejects, where old dude get shot and they're out in the desert or whatnot. That's what it reminded me of. So he had to, you know, kind of put him out of his misery. He goes and gets a tire iron and hits him over the head, knocks him out, eventually died. But the five unsolved homicides, one being Hoffman, the one I just mentioned, Smith, Detmer, Masgay, and George Maliban, who was found in Jersey City February 5th, 1980, were linked to Richard. Because he had been the last person to see all of them alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the wives had come out and said that, you know, he was meeting, you know, this guy. He went by different names, like Big Rich or the Big Guy or whatever. So that kind of led the cops in the direction of Richard. In 1985... it got so bad that they created a task force to hunt this guy down. It was made up of federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, including New Jersey Attorney General's Office and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms. And, yeah.
Hired an undercover?
Yeah, got an undercover. It was called Operation Iceman. We could have used some of that this past week.
Yeah.
And
just some ice, man.
Just some ice, man. Ah, I see what you did there. Look at Jody with the jokes. So they decide they one way that they think they're going to get close to him, because at this point he's killing off pretty much all of his friends. He's getting a little nervous. So they bring in a undercover agent, Dominic Polifrone, and. To kind of, you know, get close to him. They had a wire. He got some pretty damaging evidence.
Right.
Because,
I mean, he confessed to a lot of shit to him.
Right. Oh, he talking about how he had some rats he needed to take care of.
Yeah,
because
he was trying
to
get him to get cyanide for him.
Right, right. And so they decided that, you know, they're gonna set him up in a way that he thinks he's going to, you know, be, you know, selling some, I think it was some coke. They had another FBI agent who was posing as some rich Jewish boy who wanted to buy a bunch of coke.
Right.
And they decide that, you know, that was how they were going to get him, blah, blah, blah.
But wasn't it that Richard was trying to get cyanide?
Yes.
So they hatched up some fake cyanide.
Yeah, yeah.
And, he bought it, and that's what kind of sealed the deal for him.
Right, right.
Was because of the whole cyanide thing.
Yeah, it said that Dominic, the agent, he it's purported that he took the fake cyanide, put it on a hamburger, and gave it to a stray dog just to make sure it wasn't poison. And it wasn't. But Richard was a little suspicious about that. So he decided not to go through with the planned murder and went home instead.
Because he was going to kill the
FBI agent.
The undercover.
Right. He was getting all this information. Even the undercover said, "Yeah, I'm telling you, and I'm thinking I'm next."
Yeah, because like everybody says, who you hear it from, the fact that he's giving this guy a lot of information.
Yes.
I mean, and he knew that. And anybody knew that if somebody's going to give you this much information, that they're going to kill you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen.
So if I killed somebody and I confessed to somebody that I did it,
yeah.
I'm going to make sure I don't have any witnesses.
Exactly. And that was you know, that was a big risk that this undercover was taking, because this guy, you couldn't cross his path.
Right.
I mean, you look at them wrong, you're dead. It's one of those things. Says prosecutors charged Richard with 5 murder counts and 6 weapons violations, as well as an attempted murder, robbery, and attempted robbery.
Did he only get 2 life sentences, though?
He got sentenced to consecutive life sentences, so I'm assuming that would be 2, I guess. Official said Kuklinski had a large sums of money in a Swiss bank account and a reservation on a flight to that country. He was worldwide at this point.
Right.
He was doing a lot of traveling. Richard was held on a $2 million bail bond and made to surrender his passport. March of 1988, jury found Kuklinski guilty of 2 murders, but found that the deaths were not proven to be by him, or by Kuklinski's own conduct.
Right.
Meaning he would face, or would not face, the death penalty for them.
Right.
In all, he was convicted of 5 murders and sentenced to consecutive life sentences, making him eligible for parole, or ineligible for parole until he would be age 110.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was eligible if he could have just hung around a little longer. He only had about, 40 fucking years to go.
Only.
You know, he died at 70.
Well, at least he was in there with his brother.
Yes, he was. His brother, which I'm glad you brought that up. His brother, Joseph, he was the youngest one, I believe, out of the bunch. He was also...
Just as twisted.
Huh?
Just, I would say kind of more twisted.
He was just Richard a murderer. Was. Yeah. And apparently he raped a 12-year-old and then took her up to the top of an apartment building about 5 stories up, threw her and her pet dog off the building.
Yeah. And what'd the dog do to you? Why you gotta kill the dog?
Well, yeah, leave the fucking dog alone.
Dog can't talk.
Weirdo.
Dog ain't gonna point you out in the lineup.
Oh, my.
And he said he didn't talk to him, though.
No, he said that, you know, he would see him in passing.
Pleasantries.
Hey, how you doing? Take care. And that was about it. He said that...
He talked more to him than his brother talked to him.
And Richard doesn't seem like a man of many words.
Well, I think Richard's put it out there with him, too, on how sick that he thinks he is for raping and killing a 12-year-old girl. Because Richard's made it abundantly clear that...
He did not harm
He doesn't children. Right. But, I mean, he tries to refrain from hurting women. He wouldn't hurt them if he didn't have to. But.
Right. They they asked him, you know, do you think it was the upbringing, you know, that drove your brother to do the same things? He was like, well, I mean, got the same father.
Yep.
You know, they beat us all.
Yeah, and stabbed his mom.
Yeah, yeah. There was an incident where, you know, I guess, you know, Richard, in one of his rages, gives Barbara a knife, turns his back, and says, there you go. Here's your chance.
Yep.
Which was odd because it stated that his dad, you know, like stabbed his mom or something.
Yeah, stabbed her in the back.
They didn't kill her.
Right.
But
he stabbed her.
So, his death, after just about 18 years in prison, again, was diagnosed with Kawasaki disease. Inflammation of the blood vessels, was transferred to St. Francis Medical Center in Trenton. And he asked doctors to make sure they revived him if he developed cardiopulmonary arrest or risk of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
His then former wife, Barbara, had signed a do not resuscitate order a week before.
Yeah, 5 days.
Yeah, a week before his death, the hospital called Barbara to ask if she wished to rescind the instruction. She declined.
I mean, she does make the statement that for 25 years, she would love to have seen him dead.
Yeah, or that she if, that if she,
she
had
that if she
it,
could do it herself, exactly. She would have done it.
Yeah, 25 years, I wanted to kill him. Wow. Crazy. And again, age 70, he died. March 5th, 2006. Body was cremated. There's a... I mean, if you guys are into this, you know, kind of stuff. I know. See, I feel bad because it doesn't really seem like a horror podcast, does it?
I think so.
Kind of. I think it'll come more full circle when people check out, and I hope they do, over at nightlivingdreads.com. When you check out the interviews. In fact, I may even put one right on the homepage. Change things up a little bit. And you watch this guy, and just the coldness, just the lack of emotion until he talks about his wife and his family. How he hurt them by doing the things that, you know, he did outside of the family, in the family. He almost starts crying.
Yeah.
So there's some there emotion when it comes to his family.
Right. Because he said they're the only people we ever cared about.
Yeah, yeah. His there's a movie out, 2012, The Iceman. Michael Shannon, the one who plays Richard. It's loosely based on Anthony Bruno's book, The Iceman, the true story of a cold-blooded killer. It's also got Winona Ryder in it. Ray Liotta plays DeMeo.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a few other people there. I think this guy is I don't know, it's interesting to me.
To me, not only the fact that he do contract killings, I mean, it's horror in the fact of that you didn't know if you were safe walking down the street on right. whether you were just going to be target practice for him for that
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely, which you know reminds me, he got a crossbow one time. Here's another little story. Yeah. Got a crossbow, and I think he will mention this. Got a crossbow, and never used one before to kill, so he decides, hey, all right, I'm going to try it, and just picks a random person
right.
and shoots him in the head with a fucking crossbow.
Yeah. Shoot somebody and they're out of apple just to see how long it take them to die.
Yeah.
Had a $50 bet with a friend.
Yep, lost a $50 bet, and so I guess if you lost that bet, you had to go up and just kill somebody. Shot him in the Adam's apple, just see how long it would take him to, you know, bleed out.
Yeah.
They asked him how long. He said, a few minutes.
So not long.
No, yeah. Just a few minutes. Didn't take up my whole day or nothing. All right. So this is a little bit, you know, I guess some may see a little bit out of the realm of horror. But I think this guy is scary shit. This guy is a scary individual.
Yeah.
To say that he's not mentally ill, to me, is, I don't know, that's a slippery slope there. Because I think the abuse, you know, abuse in a, you know, for a small child growing up in a very abusive environment.
It's probably going to cause post-traumatic stress disorder.
Exactly. Can cause some lasting effects on your behavior, on your emotional stability. So I kind of think there's something there. I think he was said to, you know, maybe diagnosed as like a, you know, bipolar. Again,
right.
Who the hell isn't? But I don't know. I think he's kind of crazy. And maybe after you guys listen to how we're going to end the show here, a little bit longer than what we usually do, but that's all right, because Richard's going to take us out today. Got a, like I said, about a 13-minute clip. It's actually called The Very Best Of.
Yeah.
And you're going to hear him, you know, talk about it, and you can just hear it in his voice. You get a better understanding of how cold this guy is when you look and watch one of the interviews.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. One time, you know, we're watching one and he says something and then looks directly into the camera. It is the most eerie thing I think I've ever seen. It is just creepy to me.
Right.
So we're gonna end it with that. Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman. He's gonna take us out here. The Insane Asylum. Thank you, Mrs. Dredge.
You're welcome.
And we will be back next week. And guess what? We're going to be starting some interviews. That's right. Night of Living Dreads. They're giving us phone privileges in the insane asylum.
God help us all.
Oh, God help us all. You're right. So hopefully get some interviews in here and some people visiting the insane asylum. I hope we can have visits.
Me too.
So stay tuned for that. Again, if you like this podcast, spread it far and wide. All right, Bad Richie, take us out.
I would move heaven, hell, and anything in between to get to you. You wouldn't be safe anyway if I was mad at you. And that's not bull, Dip. That's the truth. I've went up against people. You could pull a gun on me, and if I'm mad at you, I'm coming forward. You'd have to shoot me to stop me. And if you don't kill me, you're stupid. So next time you see me, I will kill you.
Did you think of yourself as an assassin?
Assassin? Sounds so exotic. I was just a murderer. We were following this fellow. We pulled up at a red light, came alongside of him, and shot the shotgun, took his head off. He never saw the green light. He was pleased guarding all over the place. So I told him he could have a half hour to pray to God. And if God could come down and change the circumstances, he'd have that time. But God never showed up. And he never changed the circumstances. That's one thing I shouldn't have done, that one. I shouldn't have done it that way. I told him I wasn't happy that he wasn't going to pay me. He had the attitude that nobody could hurt him. I think he was wrong. Only way, he never saw Christmas.
What'd you do afterwards?
I walked away.
What'd you do when you got home?
I put toys together for the kids for Christmas.
How'd you feel?
I was annoyed I couldn't get the damn wagon together. Couldn't get to this person. He was in a disco. The idea came to me, yeah, try to act gay, but how in the hell am I going to get by? A 300-pound gay man. I mean, you know, that's a little bit far-fetched. So I went to the extreme of far-fetched. This thing, and I'm doing this, like, dancing bit. And I get onto this thing, and they got these lights. And I hate those lights, by the way, those strobe lights. Man, I hate those lights. They can't see good with them lights. And it messes up my eyes. So anyway, I'm trying to get close to this guy. So, and I bump into him. But everybody's bumping into everybody. And he had a heart attack. Popped him with the needle.
What was in the needle?
In his case, a heart attack. Crossbows, I just popped a guy in the forehead with it. Actually, it was just seeing if it would work.
Did it work?
Sure did. Went halfway into his head.
Did you ever let anyone go for whatever reason? Did you ever decide to let someone go?
Yes. But then I thought better of the idea and shot him anyway.
Did you ever murder anyone you liked?
All my friends did. At one point in time, I'm sure I liked them.
But not at the moment of killing them.
I might have even liked them then. You see, because I was put in prison by
by a man I knew 30 years. And I liked him. Big mistake. I had one friend too many. I am now serving multi-life sentences because of my one friend. And he's the only friend I didn't kill. Hoffa?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa.
Or the scuttlebutt, let's put it that way.
Scuttlebutt, he's in a Japanese car. Supposedly he was picked up, put in a drum, put in the trunk of a car, put in a crusher with other cars, crushed, and shipped overseas. That's what I heard. Don't know.
I think the last time I asked you that, you thought he was a Toyota.
Could be a Toyota. Some little Japanese car.
You tended to shoot people up close and personal.
Definitely. I wanted to tell him just before they left. I wanted to say goodbye. I wanted them looking straight at me.
What did you want them to think as they died?
Just see my pretty face. I take it to them. But the last thing they ever saw was me. And if they carry that glimpse to eternity, infinity, or whatever it is, they're gonna be thinking of me all that time.
Did you have a favorite place you'd like to shoot?
A favorite?
Yeah.
Shot a guy one time in his Adam's apple. See how long it would take him to die.
How long did it take?
A few minutes. He drowned, actually. He didn't.
Drowned in his blood?
Mm-hmm. I was with somebody else. We had a $50 bet. I lost. I took a guy down one time, just following him around. He was with a few people. Now, as they went to the bar, this person decided he couldn't wait to get inside to urinate. He never did. He went comfortably anyway. He had an empty bladder. I actually did it in a way that's maybe this is original, and maybe not, I don't know, but I put the rope around his neck, twisted it, and threw him over my shoulder and held him there. So actually, I was the tree hanging him.
Yeah.
And he eventually just stopped kicking. They gave me a picture of him. He had a knack for smoking, and they told me he smoked big cigars, Churchill cigars or something. So I pulled up alongside of him. At the time, I was riding a motorcycle. And I just said, Cuban, are they Cuban? Looks like a good cigar. And he wasn't a happy camper, because he said, fuck you. And when he said, fuck you, he looked my way and I got a clear shot of his face. It was a picture I had of the man they wanted. And I said, nah, don't fuck me, fuck you. And I just took this weapon out and blew his head off. It just disintegrated his, like you see a pumpkin get hit with a shotgun or something, they just spread out. And that's what happened. And I, light turned green about the time I shot him and I left. Riding down the road, and there was a couple of vans running around, and they were hooping and hollering there. I guess they were having a good old time and maybe drinking and whatnot. Pushed me here and pushed me there off the road, and they were running in and out. And what their problem was, I really don't know. Never did know. It came to a point where I got extremely mad. Took the 357. And just stood there. Now, apparently their eyesight mustn't be too good, because I don't think I'd walk up on a guy with a 357 standing by his side. But these fellas did. foolish mistake. They all died.
Most people, when they see horrible things, if they see somebody badly injured, certainly see something that awful, have a visceral reaction. They feel nauseated. They may want to vomit.
Mm.
It makes them very uncomfortable all over real fast.
Mm.
Did you get anything?
No, it's a good thing I didn't have to vomit, because then I would have had real problems on that motorcycle.
Dismembering bodies, did that turn your stomach?
I don't think so. I remember having pizza one day while we were doing something like that.
Pizza in one hand, chainsaw in the other?
No. I didn't like chainsaws. That's another fable that they've come up with, that I use chainsaws. See, chainsaws are messy.
Yep.
All you get is little, all over me I have these little pieces of meat. Now that's a pain in the neck if I use chainsaws. Now would I want to ruin a good shirt with a chainsaw? That would be downright stupid. The smell sometimes was annoying, but I would put cologne on. I would generally put cologne across here, so I could smell the cologne a lot better than I could smell anything else. Canoe or something like that was always nice.
Now you're dating yourself with that.
But it was still nice.
What else would you use for the smell?
So what I would take is the bottle of Canoe and just throw it all over the walls and the floor and everything. And I'd have a $25 nice smell in the room. It was an expensive deodorant. Stanley stabbed Anna, which, why, I don't recall. I don't remember what it was all about, but I remember it did happen, yeah.
Stabbed her in the back.
Yeah.
And here you are inviting Barbara to do that to you.
Stupid, wasn't it? Yeah, but I did. Yeah, it's true.
Were you testing her?
You're trying to, I don't know, it might have been. I may have, would have been a powerful thing if I was wrong.
Yeah.
I definitely would have got the point.
Told you you had a sense of humor.
I know you did. That's why I threw that in there. Had to throw all my clothes away. Yeah, I was driving a big Lincoln Town Car with butt naked. Had a sheet wrapped around me. We're having too much fun. You know that? You realize that? I'm coming across like a nice guy. Nobody's going to believe this. Nobody. I wouldn't believe this if I was watching this. I am what you call a person's nightmare. Because of the way I project myself, people think they can get by. And then all of a sudden, when they wake up, it's too late. They already hit the stop sign. And that's a dead stop.
Is that all you've got left, is hate?
That's all I've got left. Everything that I ever cared for is gone. Everything I ever liked is gone. Everything that meant anything to me is gone. So hate.
That's all you started with, too.
Then I've come full circle. It's time for me to die.
Help me. All I wanted to do was play with you. Please. Please come and play with me. I'm so lonely. Why do you seem so scared? I know things no one knows. We're going to die.